Hello everyone, I'm Lisa Wagner, and today I'm going to record a sort of a mailbag podcast. So if you follow me on Instagram, you know that I occasionally do an Ask Me Anything in stories, where I post one of those question stickers, and people post questions, and then I reply back in stories, you know, with an answer. So this past December, I hadn't done one in a while, but I thought, you know, I've never done one with my email group. So I sent out a thing to my email, you know, reply back and ask me anything. And I was surprised at how many responses that I got. And they were great questions, but they're just so involved. And they just weren't questions that I could give, you know, a short answer to, like a paragraph. So I sort of debated what to do, and I was going to do a Zoom meeting. Things just got hectic with the holidays and stuff going on in my life and me and everything. And I finally decided that I would just do a podcast. So that's what this is. I'm going to take all those questions, and I've sort of grouped them together by topic. And I may not get through every question explicitly, but I feel like I'm going to cover pretty much every topic that was brought up. And if you listen to this all the way through, I'd love to hear back from you. You know, if I answered your question, if you are satisfied with how I answered your question, if you like this format, because if you do, I could do more podcasts where, you know, I just do a mailbag thing and let you type in questions. So we'll give this a shot and see how this goes. But it's definitely going to be easier for me to talk than to try and type out, you know, pages and pages and pages of stuff to email back. So here we go. The first topic was aspects. I got the majority of the questions that came in. I think well more than half were about aspects. And they were kind of focused on just a few different ones. So that's what we're going to talk about today. And I'm going to try and weave in some of your specific examples to help explain them. So the first one we're going to talk about is conjunctions. And a conjunction occurs when, first off, aspects are angular relationships. I'm not going to go really deep into what aspects are and what they mean, because there's tons of sources for that. I have a book where I have a whole chapter on that. There's tons of resources, but I'm going to give you just a quickie overview, maybe a reminder, refresher of what each aspect is before I talk about it. So conjunctions are when the angle is zero, which means the two pieces are either exact or they're plus or minus 7 degrees. So, you know, if you have Venus at 10 degrees of Aries and Jupiter at 11 degrees of Aries, they're within 7 degrees of each other. So that's a conjunction. And they're usually the easiest aspects to spot in a chart because they're two pieces that are really close together. You have to be mindful, though, when you're looking at a chart, a printout, because not all programs necessarily print the pieces where they go. You know, they may have two pieces may be conjunct, but the computer sort of printed them, the program, you know, shows them sort of farther apart. So just a little pro tip that I tell you that I do, even though I finally stopped hand casting and I have a program that I trust, when I do a reading for someone, I still redraw their natal chart by hand. So that way I have everything placed. I know everything's in the right zones. I know aspect-wise, visually, because when I read a chart, I'm visually looking at the chart. And yes, I did hand cast for decades, because back when I was learning astrology, there were no computer programs there wasn't even internet, so there were no websites, you know, to do that. So I hand casted for a long time before I was comfortable. In fact, because there were just so many mistakes with so many programs. But once I used a program consistently for a couple years and I was satisfied that it matched the chart that I had hand cast, then I was willing to switch to hand casting. So anyway, long story short, when you look at a chart, a conjunction should look like the two pieces are really close or next to each other. So that's why they jump out at you. And what they show is that you have used those energies together so much and, you know, so closely and so often in other lifetimes that they have now sort of merged into one blended energy with you, that you just, you don't distinguish between them. So positively, that can lead to some talents, you know, like Mercury, Venus conjunct. People are usually really good at languages and words. So you can definitely have skills that you developed with that conjunction from blending those energies together so much. But conjunctions also bring confusion because they are actually distinct energies. You've chosen to glom them together, but that doesn't mean that they aren't still distinct. And it can also create, like going back to the Mercury-Venus conjunction, I'll give you a better one, Sun-Mercury conjunction. So you identify with your beliefs in such a way that you don't distinguish between who you are and what you believe. But not everybody's like that. So what happens is we tend to take who we are and what we believe and what our lived experience is, and we project it onto other people. You know, we think that, well, if you do this thing, then I can put a whole story on you because if I did that, here's what it would mean. And that's not cool. But when we have conjunctions, we especially fall into that trap. So what happens is if you disagree with someone who has Sun-Mercury conjunction, it isn't just a disagreement to them. They feel like you're invalidating who they are. You're disagreeing with their identity, not just their opinion. So conjunctions are very much a blending of energies where you've put them together. And the way to get the most out of them is to lean into the strengths they give you, but also try to really understand that though you've combined them, they are still distinct and separate, and be open to having a filter when you're dealing with other people in the world that they do things differently. I mean, that's the I don't know how else to really say it, but there's just such a trap with conjunctions to think that this is how it is, because it is so much how it is for you. So you've got this inseparable unified system. You know, you've put these pieces together. Now, how does that really operate in your chart? Well, like I said, if you have two pieces, usually that works pretty well, although you still sort of confuse them and blend them together. But when you add on more, then that's work. And then I was getting questions about what happens when you have more than two pieces conjunct. Then you've just really intensified that blending. Now you have more things that you're glomming in. Now what will happen is, just like whether it's two pieces or three pieces or more in a conjunction, while they do always act in unison, there are times where one will be more expressed than the other because of the circumstance. Anything conjunct the moon is challenging and empowering, because the moon is on all the time. You know, your moon never shuts off, because your moon is your temperament. You know, it's your feelings, it's your emotions. And so it's never off. Our feelings aren't just about what comes up when we interact with other people or interact with the world. It's also just our own inner world. And so the moon is just always in operation. And so whenever anything aspects the moon, it's felt really intimately and strongly, because that moon is always going. So when you have planets that are conjunct the moon, it means that those energies are really are coloring or filtering your emotions all the time. And I'm going to talk about the one of the triple conjunctions that was asked was Mars, Moon, and Saturn. So that's the one I'm going to kind of focus on right now. So the other thing, so I want to talk about them individually and then how we glom them together. So when you have something conjunct Saturn, Saturn is your karmic contract. You know, Saturn is what you agreed to do in exchange for the opportunity to be here. So anything that aspects Saturn really, you know, touches on that karmic contract. So when you have a peace conjunct Saturn, it's a layer in on that karmic agreement, that karmic contract. Here's what I said I would do. Now, if you don't have a peace conjunct the moon or you don't have a peace conjunct Saturn, that's okay. Don't get wigged out and say, oh, well, maybe I need one. No, your chart is exactly what it needs to be for you. So it's really important to not get into a hierarchy about which aspects or signs or whatever are better or worse than others. If you have Saturn in your chart, you have a karmic contract. But if you have a planet conjunct Saturn, then that piece is very involved in your karmic contract. And then Mars is your energy and vitality. So if you have it, it's you know, it's what gets you up and gets you going. It's your ambition, your drive. So when you have a peace conjunct Mars, that really influences your physicality, your sexuality, your energy. So if you see where I'm going here, every energy is important in and of itself. And then when you add a piece, literally on top of it, blend it with it, that's also going to color how you experience that energy. So in the case of Mars, Moon, and Saturn, I wouldn't say, because the question that I got was, I have Mars, Moon, Saturn all conjunct within 3 degrees in Cancer. Two don't do well there, but one is at home there. Is there a cancel out energy? Well, first off, I kind of want to dispel the notion that two don't do well there. Yes, obviously, planets are more easily expressed in certain signs than others. But there is so much that influences that in a chart. There's the house that it's in. There's aspects to it. There's the degree that it is. There's the nature of the chart itself. So I really would encourage you to step away from thinking some planets are good in this sign, some planets are bad in this sign, because, you know, once you've looked at tens of thousands of charts and talked to people, you really have an appreciation for how nuanced and complex this is. And you can't really have hard and fast rules. But I get when you're learning, you know, it's easier to break it down. So in this case, the moon does rule Cancer. So right off the bat, you think, okay, there's a bit of a bump there with this moon in Cancer. That's going to be really strongly felt. And there's some truth there. But also, you know, what if you have your sun in Aries? So that's going to give a little bit of an oomph to that Mars. Or what if you have Capricorn rising? And that's going to give an oomph to that Saturn. In addition to the fact that Mars is your energy, physical energy, Saturn is your karmic contract and your boundaries. So they all have their own oomph. So even though the moon is at home in Cancer, it's, you know, none of these energies are going to wipe each other out. Now, what's going to happen is what's going to determine whether or not something gets canceled out is about what you choose to develop and the choices that you make. So for example, let's look at this Mars, Moon, Saturn triple conjunction. So this person's temperament, this person's, you know, emotional history, this person's, you know, how they process their emotions is really tied to both Mars and Saturn. All three are really working together. So let's just break that down into some examples. I would say that this person may have issues sometimes struggling with depression. And the reason is because their mood is so tied to their emotional, you know, temperament is so tied to how they physically feel. So if this person is really super healthy, they're going to feel fantastic. You know, but if they're tired, if they didn't get a good night's sleep, if they're not eating well, if they have a health issue, that's going to hit their mood. I mean, it would hit anybody's mood. Okay, so don't get me wrong. But very acutely. So, you know, I've had health issues that I've had to deal with in my life, but I've never dealt with clinical depression. Do I get down sometimes? Sure. But it's not the same thing as someone with Moon Mars together, where their physical state and emotional state function in unison. So I'm not saying that you're doomed to be depressed if you have that. But what I am saying is that you have a challenge of maintaining your physical health is critical to maintaining your emotional health. And one of the ways that this person is going to do that is by having healthy boundaries, because we've got Saturn there too. So it says, like it or not, you really need to put some energy into eating regularly, eating healthy food regularly, getting rest regularly. You have to get a good night's sleep every night. You know, you have to attend to your physical needs on a regular basis. Some people can afford to be a bit more scattered. I know when I was young, I'm not saying this as a positive thing, but what I'm saying is that when I was young, I was able to push my body more to extremes. You know, I could get little sleep through the week and then sleep a lot on the weekend and catch up. And I could kind of stay healthy that way. As I've gotten older, you know, obviously I've had to adjust that, and I have been forced to take care of my body on a more regular daily basis. But somebody with this triple conjunction would have been like this from the get-go. Even when they were young, they still needed to have that regularity, because Saturn is time and space, it's boundaries. And so when Saturn is conjunct something, it says you really need to have some structure here. You really need to pay attention to a foundation here. And when you do that, you're going to reap a reward from that. But if you think, well, I shouldn't have to, you know, but I have this, that, and the other going on, so I'm not going to, it's going to fall apart. So this triple conjunction is going to require this person, in order for their physical health and emotional health, to have some good structure and support, and to have self-care be not only the emotional things that you want to tend to yourself, but also just the pure flat out physical needs, eating, sleeping regularly, all of that. It also means that this person is going to feel that in order to feel emotionally safe, they need to feel as if they have energy. And it may sound kind of strange, but like if this person feels tired, if they feel like their vitality, they just don't have gas in the tank, that can feel scary, because Saturn is, where do we feel safe? So are you starting to see how these things always go together? Safety, security, emotional well-being, Mars, ambition, all of this stuff is always functioning together. So in order for this person to get passionate and fired up, they have to feel emotionally invested in what they're getting fired up about. And they have to feel safe and secure in what they're getting fired up about. So if they don't have an emotional connection, they're not going to have any energy for it. Or if it doesn't feel safe to them, or it feels too disorganized or unstable, they're not going to get emotionally invested, or they're not going to get fired up. So it's those things are always needing to function together. And if you feel like something is getting canceled out, if you feel like something is being ignored, it's going to show up in the other things. So you always want to go back to what does each one mean individually, and how can they support each other? Well, they can support each other by, you know, getting honest and clear about how you feel. You know, what are your feelings? Where do you want? How do you feel nurtured? Where do you feel nurtured? What do you care about? And make sure that that's where you're investing your physical energy, and that your physical needs are being attended to, and that you do feel safe and secure. And the thing is, the more you feed energy into each one, the more the other two also get fed. It's when you ignore any one of those that the other two are going to get depleted also, because no one planet can compensate for the other. You know, it's not like you can say, well, I'll just make sure I tend to my emotional needs, but I won't care for my body. Well, it's not going to work. So the thing, if you have any, when you have a conjunction of even two things, it's all that stays the same. And the more pieces you add that are conjunct, it just means there's more pieces that you need to really pay attention to. And when you nurture and care for one, you will feed the others. And as I mentioned earlier, it's important to understand that while you function that way, not everyone does. So there are some people that can be very successful pursuing a particular ambition and not necessarily have an emotional investment in it. You know, some people can be very successful at a job, for example, and it's not something they really care a lot about, you know, and you know, they're not hypocrites or they're not wrong. Maybe, you know, that job fills other needs for them. Maybe it fills a financial need for them that then, you know, powers up other things in their life. But the person with this needs that emotional fulfillment in order to get fired up. And so one of the things to do when you're sort of judging other people is, you know, look at those judgments, and that can give you some insight into how pieces in your chart are being expressed. Now, just to be clear with a disclaimer, I'm not saying that all judgment is bad. You know, there are things that are just flat out wrong. Like, don't be cruel. I don't care. You know, there's just no excuse for being cruel. Okay. But, you know, there are many things that we do where we're just different, you know, where we just function differently, and that's okay. And the challenge sometimes in being maintaining our close connections with each other is to recognize that we just may think differently. We may process language differently. We may process our emotions differently. We may need differing amounts of time to deal with emotions. And that doesn't, one isn't better than the other. It's just who we are. So, you know, if you find yourself struggling with judgments, looking at conjunctions sometimes can be very insightful in helping you sort of unpack that and decode that and figure out what that's about. So anyway, I hope that gives you some insight into, you know, when you have multiple pieces that are conjunct. Now, the next aspect I'm going to talk about are oppositions, because I got a lot of questions about oppositions. And oppositions are probably the next easiest aspect to see just by looking at a chart, because it's when pieces are exactly opposite each other. So the angle between them is 180 degrees. So when you look at a chart and you see they line up, they're just opposite each other. And that's plus or minus 7 degrees. When I say plus or minus, that's also known as the orb of the aspect. And I use 7 degrees for conjunctions, squares, trines, and oppositions. And I use 3 degrees for sextiles and quincunx. But back to the opposition. So oppositions can occur. Usually they're in opposite signs, but they don't have to be, because again, you've got that 7 degree leeway, and they're usually in opposite houses. But again, depending upon how close that the pieces are to the cusp of the house, they wouldn't necessarily be in exactly opposite houses. And what they mean is, it's you're aware of both the energies, and you don't confuse them like you do with a conjunction, but you don't know how to get from one to the other. So the example I always use is, you're driving down the highway and you see this building off in the distance. Let's say it's a hotel, and that's where you want to go, but you can't figure out how to get off the highway to get over there. So the opposition is, I know that these two energies exist in me. I get it. I feel each of them individually, but I don't know how to get them to play nice with each other. I don't know how to get them to work with each other. And it's this odd mixture of sort of, sometimes there's like a denial of one on the other, because you don't know how to get there. Sometimes it's easier than to just sort of push it aside or pretend it's not there. And, you know, that came from past life experiences where the two work together, but in a way that didn't result in something good for you. And so you
sort of detach them now. Like you don't know how to make them work well for you. And just a side note, when you have an opposition to the sun, that can be really tricky because you came in not seeing that that opposing piece is still part of you, because your sun is the identity in this life. You know, it's who you aspire to be. And when something opposes that, you kind of don't know how to get to that part of yourself. So you can maybe tend to want to disassociate from it and just be in denial about it. Like, that's not me. Now, if it's an opposition to the sun within 1 degree, it's called a mirror. And there is sort of an odd mixture of both identification and denial, because it's so tight. It's almost as if you can see it, and you've made a commitment in this life to really own that part of you. But in any case, oppositions are about saying, I don't know how to get from this piece to that piece. And it doesn't mean that in this life you'll never be able to, because here's the thing I want you to remember about everything in your chart. These aspects are announcements. You know, you came in with this history, but with every piece of history that's showing up in this particular chart, there is a way and a mechanism to deal with the lesson that there is. I mean, you know, you can only pack so many lessons into a lifetime, you know, so your soul chose a particular set of lessons that are achievable. There's nothing in that chart that dooms you, absolutely nothing. And the only people that believe that are people that have a victim mentality, of people that think they're fucked no matter what happens. You know, there's nothing they can do, and that's just it. And you know what? Don't learn astrology from people like that. Seriously, you don't learn anything from people like that, because it's just not true. You can't always change the experience, the circumstances of something, but you can change your experience. And you can't always create a particular set of circumstances that you want. But there is a way to get to what's most important to you. One example I always use is, you know, let's say you're 50 years old and you're watching the Winter Olympics are coming up. I'm recording this in January of 2026, and you're watching the figure skaters and you think, wow, you know, I think I'd like to learn to figure skate and maybe get in on the next Olympics. Well, you know what? It's not going to happen. I'm sorry, but you're not going to be able at 50 years old to learn to skate at an Olympic level and then get in the Olympics, okay? You're competing against, you're just not. If I have to explain that to you, then you're not even going to understand anything in this podcast. So, you know, no. But can you learn to figure skate when you're 50? Can you learn to skate? Yeah, you could learn to skate. If your desire is to have some experience, some kind of physical competition, maybe you can with skating, or maybe there's some other physical thing that you can get in. Maybe you could, you know, I don't know what it would be because I don't know what your interests are, but there could be some other way that you could compete. Maybe you just are craving some kind of recognition. There's another way you could get recognition. So the thing is, even though you can't become an Olympic figure skater at age 50, that doesn't mean that you can't enhance your mind-body connection, that you can't learn to skate, that you can't, you know, compete in some way physically, that you can't have some kind of achievement. So, you know, it's important to not get bogged down and think that what you really want, what's really most important to you is somehow out of your reach. Maybe certain circumstances are, but that's not really the point of it. You know, you have to be willing to go beyond just that one version that you think is necessary. So the thing with the opposition is, there is a way to get those parts of you working together. There is absolutely a way to do that. And let's see, some of the questions that I got are, there were so many oppositions. So this is definitely something a lot of you are dealing with. First step is really the recognition of saying, I know, is to own and honor each one of those energies. So let's say that you have Venus opposing Saturn or Pluto, for example, because those were some of the examples I had. So Venus is your sense of priorities. It's what you value. It's what you love. It's every way in which we assign value. That's why Venus includes money. A lot of people don't understand why Venus is money. It's because Venus is human love, and money is one of the ways, and value, and money is one of the ways that we identify value. It's how we say what things are worth, because at the core of it, Venus is about the energy of worth. And that's why it's also your priorities. What is most important to you? And, you know, when you love something, it becomes beautiful to you. You know, it's your sense of aesthetic. So that's something you have to wholly own. And then let's look at Saturn. Saturn is your limitations, what makes you feel safe. It's your karmic contract. It's what you agreed to do in exchange for the opportunity to be here. Venus opposing Saturn is someone that says, I don't know how to go after what I value, to live my priorities and be responsible. Because what that person tends to do is, you know, they're either just sort of unabashedly doing what, you know, going after money, for example, but not being responsible about it, or not being responsible to the people that they have responsibility to, or they feel because of their responsibilities, you know, they struggle to make money because they feel so trapped in the responsibilities that they have that they don't know how to really feed the passion and priorities that would bring them the money. You know, they don't know how to do both of them at the same time. You know, the conjunction is the pieces are melded together and a person does them at the same time to the point that they blur them and think they're the same. An opposition says, I struggle to do both things at the same time. I struggle to understand my own values and what's important to me while I'm also keeping myself safe, while I'm also fulfilling my responsibilities. And so there can be a tendency that it's almost like a teeter-totter where you do one or the other. One is up, the other's down. And finding that point on the teeter-totter where it's the same level, where one isn't higher than the other, that's sort of what you're going for. And the way you move forward with that is you have to kind of first own them and understand them individually and then see how one might be negating the other. So you may be like, for example, I see this sometimes with women that are in unsafe relationships. They are with someone they love, but they don't feel safe. They don't know how to set boundaries. They have a job that they love and they don't know how to set healthy limits in the job that they have. Or they're hyper responsible. Maybe it's a single mom who sacrifices, you know, having love in her life because all of her energy is devoted to taking care of her kids, and she just doesn't have room to have love in her life that's just for her. So, you know, this can manifest in a lot of different ways. But the thing is, you aren't doomed to this. You know what? I see a lot of charts of people that have very healthy, happy marriages that have that opposition, that have jobs they love with that opposition. So what I'm trying to do is show you that if you're struggling with it, what you need to do is pick apart the individual pieces of the opposition and say, okay, how do I nurture and support each of these individually? And then what could help me knit them together? And sometimes it's about investing in the houses that these two pieces are in. That can help you see a connection. Sometimes there's other aspects to each of those pieces that can kind of be a way in, you know, a way into seeing how you can stimulate them, you know, to work together. So it's kind of complicated to go into this without looking at a lot of individual examples. So we could talk for hours on just, you know, oppositions in a chart. But I guess what I want you to see is that getting the pieces to work together usually begins with owning that there is a disconnect, understanding what each one means to you, and then looking at ways in which the two can work together. And usually that involves some kind of external support, you know, talking to a therapist, talking to having a support group, you know, whatever way in which it's manifesting as a struggle or a challenge in your life, get support for that. Yes, this is your lesson, but you know what? Other people have struggled with the same type of lesson, and there are resources for you, whether it's a therapist, whether it's a support group, whether it's a book or a teaching or a whatever. Don't think that you're doomed to it. It's that aspect shows up for you to get your attention and say, hey, work on this. In this lifetime, work on this. Because if you do, you will benefit, you will grow, you will gain by doing that. So hopefully that helps to explain oppositions. And then I also got some questions on squares. And this is the last aspect I'm going to talk about. And we'll move to another topic. So squares are the forced awareness. So when one energy is activated, you're forced to be aware of the other. The angle is a 90-degree angle, plus or minus 7 degrees. The thing about squares is that they challenge you. Now, there are, again, with everything in your chart, there are pluses and minuses to that. So things that square Mars, for example, can be really energizing. They can be those things that get you, you know, up off your butt. You know, Sun square Mars, those are usually people that are really ambitious. They achieve a lot. They can be very athletic. So squares aren't bad. But squares challenge you and they can create friction. And you have past lives where those energies did not necessarily work well together. And so in this life, what you're trying to do is get them to work together in a way where they positively motivate and amp up each other without causing you to feel friction as a result of that square. And some planets do better in squares than others. You know, Moon and Venus, they don't really like squares so much because they're softer energies, you know, whereas like Mars and Uranus, they thrive more in squares because of the type of energy that they are. Again, it's not good or bad, but that's just kind of the way it is. And when you have anything square the Moon, that's really challenging because again, the Moon is on all the time. The Moon is your temperament and it's how you feel. And when you have something that's where you're constantly being forced aware of it, you know, it can be hard. And, you know, the Moon also shows the mother and or the sort of feminine energy in which you were raised with. And so Moon square Pluto can often be someone who grew up in a family where there was a lot of control, you know, a very controlling family that they were just constantly being forced to be aware of, having a choice, not having a choice. So, you know, squares to the Moon are very challenging, but when you unpack them, when you deal with your own issues, then you move into the energizing quality of a square. So I guess that's what I want you to see about these more difficult aspects like an opposition or a square, is that the more you grow through those lessons, there is another side. And you may wonder, well, what's the other side to an opposition? You know, how can that be good? Well, what can be positive once you have a really healthy relationship with the energies that are in the opposition, they can really help you to get insight that is very keen. It's very specific, like going back to that Venus-Saturn opposition, then that's someone, once they've kind of healed and they've gotten to a place where, you know, it's not causing disruption in their life, then they could become it doesn't function as a conjunction, but it does function where the person can see the distinct differences, but knows how to make them work together. So it's like a conjunction, but minus the confusion, if that makes sense. So then that's a person that can be really good at understanding what's important to them, what their priorities are, and exactly what they need to feel safe, what earthly resources they need to get it done. Do you see what I mean? So once you get to a point where that opposition isn't creating a problem for you, now the energies work well together. And same with the square. The square can then energize instead of creating friction. And then I was asked about a T-square. And what a T-square is when you have three pieces where two of them are opposite, and then the third piece squares both of those things that are opposite. So what that means is that, you know, you've got this opposition where, you know, you can't get there from here. And, you know, you've struggled with that so much that, you brought in a third piece to help stimulate you to get this going. So this, you know, you've been kind of around the block a few times with trying to get those energies to work together. And so, you know, now your sort of soul said, well, we struggled with that. So then we thought we'd bring in this other piece, but that just sort of blew up, you know, and it didn't really work, but it does help agitate the other two. So on a positive note, what that T-square says is that piece that's squaring the other two that are opposite, it can help get them going. So when you just feel stuck, that third energy, if you focus on that, that can help stimulate the other two and sort of get something going. So that can help you be a point. When you have a T-square, look at that piece that's squaring the other two and seeing how focusing a bit on that part of yourself can help you to shake loose whatever way you're stuck, because I can't get there from here. Then the other thing that I want to talk a little bit about are houses. I got questions on houses, and just it's too many. I'm not going to go through every house. I think I have a podcast on that. I definitely have a lot of information available on houses. But the two houses that came up the most with questions were the 8th house and the 12th house. And I've just found, you know, in general that those are the two houses that people tend to get scared about when they read other, you know, astrology resources, or when they talk with other people about astrology. And so I want to just speak for a few minutes about these houses. Again, there's nothing to be afraid of in your chart. Nothing. You know, your soul brought you in to this time and place to have this astrology chart for reasons. It isn't arbitrary. So your astrology chart isn't some kind of signal from the universe that says, we're out to get you. We're going to screw you over so bad in this life that you're just going to be miserable. That's not what it's about. It's saying, hey, here's your history. And this particular life is about dealing with this segment of your history. It's about healing these parts of yourself and learning these lessons. And so there's a way to do that. There is always a way to do that. And I can't tell you how many people, you know, how many charts I've seen of people with really gorgeous lives that have a lot in the 8th or the 12th. So, you know, so right off the bat, you have to just detach from the good and bad labels of it. Now, everything in astrology has grace, beauty, and challenge that go along with it. In the 8th house, the 8th house is the zone of vulnerability. It's intimacy. It's occultism. It's mystery. It's secrecy.
It's transformation.
People that have a strong 8th house, when I say strong, I just mean they have some placements in it. In fact, let me just back up a second. If you have one, two, or three things, planets, you know, in a house, I would call that strong, because you've got something in there. You've got an investment in there. When you have four or more, it's becoming ridiculous. Four or more planets in a sign is a sign stellium. Four or more planets in a house is a house stellium. And I know some of you out there are like digging into asteroids and everything you possibly can, because you're trying to contrive a stellium in something. And there's no point in that. I mean, just really, it's kind of silly. So if you have four or more things in a house, that's kind of beyond strong. That says that there's sort of an obsessive need to really heal and deal with that house. Okay. But if you have one, two, or three things in a house, that means, you know, you're making an investment in that house. The sign shows the karmic history. The house shows the current life focus. I have three things in the 8th house. And, you know, not surprising, you know, I'm an astrologer. This 8th house is a cult. I was a hospice volunteer for more than 10 years. 8th house deals with death and dying. So a strong eighth house can be someone who is an investigator, a detective, someone who's a therapist, you know, someone who deals with people on a very intimate level. Everybody I meet tells me, I'm in the grocery store talking to a stranger and they're telling me things they've never told anybody else, you know, because of my placements there, people naturally trust me and who I am, people naturally trust me. But you can have stuff in the eighth house, and depending upon who that person is, they may not be a nice person, you know? So it doesn't mean that it's because of the eighth house that makes them bad. You know, you could maybe have an assassin with, you know, three planets in the eighth house, but it's not the eighth house that made them that way. I guess that's what I'm trying to say. You know, I've never physically struck anyone in my whole life. I've never physically hurt anyone in my life. I've maybe hurt them with my words or with my disagreement, but I'm a pretty good, kind person. So the eighth house doesn't make you good or bad, but it does show that you have some investment there. And then based on the planets that you have there, it shows what kind of investment. For example, I find that one of the challenging planets to have in the eighth house is Mercury. And, you know, positively, you can have someone who's a great researcher, who's a good investigator, who's able to have really intimate conversations with people. But what I've also found is you can have people that really buy into conspiracy theories and really get like so deep into creating these sort of strange motivations and machinations to people that it's not healthy. So right there with Mercury, you can see, well, this could be a really glorious placement, or this could be a little problematic, because it really depends on not only the rest of the chart, but on who you are as a person, you know, how you were raised, that has an influence. And then even as an adult, where you have to own all of that, the choices that you make. So there's no bad placement. But if you have something in the eighth house, it says you are learning in this life to more intimately own that part of yourself, to be vulnerable in some ways, to learn to be vulnerable, to learn to protect people that feel vulnerable. To, you know, I was talking to, I remember this client who had, I'm trying to remember what she had in the eighth house, but basically she made a decision at one point in her life to move back home and help with her family's business for a while. And it was an insurance business. And, you know, she did that for a while. And then she went on back into the rest of her life. And she kind of felt that at that particular time, she sort of owed that to her family. And she did. And she sort of paid that debt and moved on. And the debt was in the eighth house, but it wasn't because it wasn't about dying, but life insurance is about dying. You know what I mean? So it wasn't about somebody in her family dying, but the family business was insurance. The thing to remember is that there are so many layers and levels to everything in the chart, including houses. So try not to get drawn up into the doom and gloom of it all, but do get caught up in, when do I feel vulnerable? How do I feel vulnerable? How do I show up for people that are vulnerable? How do I make people feel safe? How do I have intimate connections with people? You know, look at what the house means and then ask yourself, how do I function in that part of my life? And if you have things to heal there, you need to heal them because you made an investment. If you have any placements in the eighth house, you made an investment. I know one of the things that I did, I mentioned I was a hospice volunteer for a little over 10 years because I just felt this really strong draw that I needed to do that. One of my placements in the eighth is Saturn. And I know that was part of my karmic contract. It wasn't all of it, but it was definitely for me, that was one of the pieces of that. And so I spent over 10 years working with people, both people that were dying and families of loved ones that were dying or had passed. And that was part of just something I felt I needed to do. And then I reached a point where I felt I satisfied that. And I stopped the volunteering part. So, you know, it's really important to look at what the house means, look at it objectively, and then ask yourself, okay, what part of that can I sort of own and what part of that am I avoiding? Because if I have a piece in a house, it means I need to put some energy into that house in some way. If you're listening to this podcast, you're into metaphysics, occult, whatever, because you're into astrology, that's very eighth house. So that can be one form of it, you know? And I know that was part of it for me, again, with my karmic contract, that I was really drawn to astrology and then to become an astrologer. You have to really separate yourself from the gloom and doom out there. Don't let that color you. Don't let that box you in. Continue to make choices that are in supportive of your life and heal your wounds and move forward. Because the eighth house is such a gorgeous, glorious part of your life, having intimate connections with people, you know, really showing them who you are, giving people a safe place to show you who they are. A lot of really amazing therapists and healers have a strong eighth house. So there's just so much good there. Do not get dissuaded by the crapola that's out there. And then the 12th house, same thing. You know, the 12th house is, I would say where the eighth house has more of the secrecy vibe, the 12th house is more of a privacy vibe. So if you have stuff in the 12th house, you are definitely someone who has a need for privacy, a need to check out, a need for solo time. The 12th house is sort of that area that even that sort of the dream state that bridges astral projection, you know, that bridges the portal, like from this world to the next world kind of thing. So people that have stuff in the 12th house, no matter how much you, if you have a partner, no matter how much you love that partner, you still need a little bit of some time for just you, whether it's a hobby, whether maybe you go out running, you know, whatever it is, you need to have something where it's just kind of you. That's part of what you need. It's also the 12th house is where we put, you know, things that we don't want other people to see. The woman I studied with always called it the closet of the zodiac, where you sort of push the stuff out of the way that you don't want people to see when they come to your house.
I really love that because, you know, your ascendant is your front door, if you will, and then just next to it is your closet.
So it's also where we can kind of scare ourselves. It's where we have these sort of dramas that we create in our own head and we scare ourselves. So the example I've always used that seems to help people is, you know, if you and I make plans for lunch and then I cancel for whatever reason, let's say I don't feel well, but regardless of why I cancel, you sort of create this thing in your head that I'm just not really your friend anymore, that I've become bored with you or annoyed with you, and I'm just making up reasons to not have that conversation, but I'm trying to just, you know, extract myself from your life. And you get into this whole thing where your insecurities feed this whole drama, and really, I just didn't sleep well, and I was tired, and I just didn't want to meet up for lunch. If you have things in the 12th house, be mindful of the fact that you may be creating sort of illusions or delusions about other people or your circumstances that just aren't true. Like the eighth house can have sort of a paranoid view, like that Mercury, when I told you about the, you know, conspiracy theories. People with Mercury in the eighth can kind of slide into, people are out to get me. The 12th house, it can be more delusional. It's more of like the world is out to get me, not so much necessarily with individual people, but you can slide into this thinking there's no place for me here. And that's why the 12th house, you'll read that it rules like institutions, hospitals, prisons, because it's where we detach from our culture that we live in. So those kinds of institutions are where we put people, where we say, You know, you're too sick to be out here in the world with us, so you need to be in a hospital, or you need to be in a nursing home, or you've created a crime, you need to be in a prison. So people with stuff in the 12th house, you know, can be afraid of being sick. They can be afraid of being ostracized. They can be afraid of losing their mental health. So if you have any of those kinds of fears, it's important to look at what those pieces are, what may be feeding those, and just understand that having pieces there does not mean that you will end up sick physically or mentally or, you know, in prison. Now, I have seen a startling number of, well, I think almost every person I've ever met that worked in a prison had something in the 12th house. I'll just put it that way. I can't, maybe there was one and I don't remember it, but I think pretty much, and yeah, I've actually done charts for a lot of prison guards and people that work in prisons. Because what happens is, you know, I do a chart for somebody in a law firm, and then pretty, you know, before you know it, I've done 12 other lawyers in that firm. What, regardless of what the place of where people work or their family, you know, then I do a lot of charts for people in that family. So once I did my first, this woman, she worked in a male prison. She was just really this amazing woman. And then guess what? I got other referrals. So that's how you can kind of see patterns, you know, over time too.
Now, to be clear, I'm not saying if you have something in the 12th house, you're going to work in a prison. My point is the people that pursued that line of work often had something in the 12th house. So there is a difference.
But just because you have something there, you know, you may end up working with people that feel disenfranchised, for example. Doesn't mean they're in one of these institutions, but they may be people that feel like there's no place for me in this world. And that may be a group that you feel drawn to support or to help. Or maybe that's something you feel, there's no place for me in this world. So it's really important that you look for safe spaces and look for support to see, absolutely, you belong here because you're here. Because you're here, you belong here. And what you need to find are professionals that support you, that are willing to give you professional services, neighborhoods that accept you. You know, look for those safe spaces because they will exist. And it just means that you may have to do some work to own that part of yourself, to own that feeling, and then find where you do belong. So the 8th and the 12th, they're not bad. You know, there's so much beauty, there's so much power in these houses, but they require you, just like everything else you have to face in your chart, they require you to own who you are. And when you find yourself making excuses or wanting to avoid something, that's okay. I got no judgment for you there. Just know that it's not going to, whatever you're avoiding isn't going to self-correct. It's maybe you pull out your favorite oracle deck or your tarot deck and you don't get cards that you want. So you shuffle and you draw again, right? Maybe those, and you do it again and again. Well, you know what? Or you use a pendulum or whatever your tool is. But maybe that first thing that you got is something you just need to own. It doesn't mean you're doomed for something bad, but the more totally honest you are with yourself, oh my gosh, there is so much power there. Because once you own that, then you can just let go of what you don't want to stick, and you can get on a rocket ship towards what you do want. It all starts with owning that, you know, owning who you are. You know what? There are more questions, but I think this has got to be it for this podcast. I got to see how long I've been talking here, because I think we'll have to do another mailbag. So if you're not on my email list yet, go to my website, karmicastrology.com. Sign up to get in my mail group. I don't email very often. In fact, I know I should email more often. It's often months in between an email, so you're not going to get bombed with emails from me. But what it will let you do is get in on the next mailbag that I do. And you'll see when I do send stuff out, you know, you'll be on that list. And let me know if this is helpful. Let me know if this works for you. I also was thinking about doing some Zoom calls. I planned to do one in January, but you know what? It's the 28th. So I think we're probably going to have to look at February if I do. And that's where I would send information out to. The other thing is, you know, my participation in other social media is very, very up and down. I was more active on Instagram, and then I sort of dropped away from it for a while. I posted a few things recently, but if you want to stay in touch with me, sign up for the email and then you'll know wherever I'm at. And I hope this is helpful. I just want you to know how amazing you are, that you came in with so many gifts, so much to offer. You came in with lessons to learn. You came in with challenges as you kind of set up for yourself. But I tell you, when you embrace them and you work through them, there is so much for you on the other side of that. And I hope that whether you, I can help you through astrology or however you find your way through that, I hope you do, because I only want the best for you. Have a beautiful day.